Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. Before we start this week, I have an announcement to make. We're doing a 2025 Dirty Giants Big Shed contest. So kind of what that entails, you have to be wearing a piece of Dirty Giants gear. So we have the hats up on our website right now. Hopefully we'll have some shirts there soon as well. And there's going to be two categories, so biggest single and biggest set. The set, we're going to give a 20-inch inside spread credit to all of them just to kind of make it fair across the board. And to be entered in this, you have to be wearing a piece of Dirty Giants gear, so a hat or eventually a shirt. And those hats, like I said, are on our website right now. We're just going to do mule deer sheds only this year. You have to have picked up the shed or set this year, so the 2025 shed season. And that's kind of the biggest hang-up I've had with the shed contest, trying to figure out how to validate that. But I think through social media and stuff, we'll put the pictures of the biggest ones up for a while and just kind of vent it through social media, make sure that those sheds were in fact picked up this season. And then the top sheds, we're actually going to try to find a way to personally measure the sheds just to make it uniform and make sure the person with the biggest shed actually does win. And all those photos must be submitted by May 31st to be entered. And how you enter, you just find the shed, take a picture with your Dirty Giants hat on, and then you're going to send the picture to the email dirtygiantssheds@gmail.com. So the biggest set is going to get a free shoulder mount. The cape and everything is included from Strip Taxidermy. He's done all my deer mounts and he does an incredible job. It's crazy. They look so real. I love looking up at them and it just looks like how they looked right before I killed them. And then we're also going to get a free mini muley of the set, so I appreciate them doing that. That's a pretty cool thing. And then $250 to Art of the Hunt. You've heard me talk about them on the podcast before. They do some really, really cool stuff, kind of make a design of your buck, or in this case your sheds, and you can put it on a hat, shirt, phone case. They have all sorts of stuff. And then the biggest single is going to get the free mini muley of the shed, the $250 to Art of the Hunt as well. But then Antler Tech is going to do a clone of the shed. So what Antler Tech does is they mirror your actual shed and then make a replica. So it's like you have a set of the single shed that you have. It's super cool what they do. I don't know how they do it, but I'll post some videos up of some of the sheds they've done. It's pretty amazing. And then the random winner is going to get $100 to Art of the Hunt, and then a free mini muley of their shed as well. So pretty cool stuff. I hope that gets you guys excited for the contest. I'm excited to see what's picked up, and I really do appreciate any of the support. If you guys can buy a hat or whatever, it helps me a lot. I put it all back into the podcast to get better sound, better gear, better stuff to try to make the podcast bigger and better. So I really appreciate it. I know that was kind of a long introduction, so let's go ahead and get into this podcast.
This podcast, we got Tyson Hudson of Alpine Antler Restoration, and Tyson killed an absolute giant this year. And like, pictures don't do this buck justice. I was at the fire station working, and he brought the buck by, and he told me it was like a 200 plus inch typical, like pushing 210, and the pictures looked big. And then he pulled it out of his truck, and I was like, you know when you see those big bucks and like sometimes you're like almost want to throw up, they're so big. That's how this was. He pulled it out of the truck. I couldn't believe my eyes. It is crazy big. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, but Tyson, I really appreciate you getting on and taking the time to do this.
No, well, thanks for having me on. I mean, yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a shock. I mean, it's fun. It's a lot different when you have that thing in your hands. I mean, the pictures don't really do him justice, the mass, and just being a general seasoned deer, I just feel like you don't get all those things to kind of come together for a deer, especially in Utah, because I feel like Utah's predominantly a non-typical mule deer genetic. So it's pretty awesome to see those typical giants every once in a while.
Yeah, like you had some other bucks in your truck too, like with extras and everything, but like your buck just stole the show. Like just that big frame, like it's just nothing's cooler to me than just a giant frame, and that's exactly what he had. Like it's just such an impressive deer. So I appreciate you taking the time to stop and show it to me too, just to get my hands on it. Like that thing's crazy.
Yeah, well, we've been talking a bit. I know we've been trying to find a time to kind of get on the podcast, and you know, I've happened to, you know, doing the antler restoration and stuff. I do some repair work for some of the taxidermists and whatnot, and I had to come down to pick up some elk that needed some repair, and I was actually dropping off a replica set of my buck that's getting mounted up. So because I was in the area, you know, and I went down to school at Dixie, so I kind of have some roots there, but it was good to meet up and, you know, we talked a little bit about it and just throw hands on it. It always kind of makes it a little bit funner when you've actually thrown hands on the deer and seen it in person.
Oh, for sure. And you left out a few pieces of the story, cause we kind of wanted like the full story on the podcast and kind of get the reaction there. But before we dive into that, I just kind of want to help the listeners get to know you a little better. Like where you grew up and then how you got here and I guess how you started your love for big mule deer.
Yeah. I mean, well, I actually grew up in Alberta, Canada. You know, my mom was born in the States and then, the whole family moved up there. You know, her parents and started ranching. And so, yeah, I grew up in Canada and, honestly, up there, hunting is, you know, there's not a whole lot of grocery stores. And if there are, they close really early or they're far away. So I just, every Sunday for Sunday dinner, it was venison steak and potatoes. Like that's what it was. Like it was no doubt. And, you know, and so I grew up, you know, when I was younger, my dad would roll up, he'd come back from Saskatchewan or he'd come back from hunting with his buddies and the truck would just be piled, with either, you know, a combination of mule deer and whitetail or big whitetail or big mule deer. Cause one of the buddies would draw a good tag.
Yeah.
And so that's all I really knew. And, I think it was, and I didn't know this at the time, but I think I had to have been like 6 or 7. There was I think it was a whitetail got hit and broke all 4 legs on the highway and crawled over by our neighbor's silage pit. And so they called the Fish and Wildlife and said, hey, like we got this buck, broken legs or whatever. And they gave him the okay to kind of put about his misery. It was completely alert, but it was just totally messed up.
Yeah.
And so I remember being like 6 or 7 and driving over in the truck with my dad and my neighbor, and we go and I see this deer and I'm just like buck fever. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have no clue that this deer has broken legs and stuff. I think it's like the most authentic hunt at that age. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And so I get out there and I have a 22.
Yeah.
And they're just like, all right. They're like, all right, put that crosshair right between his eyes. And I'm like, okay. He's like, are you ready? Ready? Yeah. Pull the trigger. Boom. Right between the eyes. Drop the deer. And I still have that rack.
Do you
and
really?
It's skull cap. And there's a 22 bullet hole in the skull cap.
That's so cool.
And then, yeah, I mean, being that old, we went back, you know, we went over, we gutted it. And, you know, my dad and him kind of pulling, they're like, hey, you know, first kill, you got to take a bite of the heart. Man, I didn't even think twice about it. It was so nasty, but I'm like, oh yeah, this is my moment. So I took a big old bite of that heart and oh gosh, I think I don't know. I probably like threw up or something. It was probably so nasty, but yeah, that got me hooked. I mean, ever since, you know, growing up, I was just waiting for my dad to be like, all right, you're coming to Saskatchewan with the boys this year, you know, like let's go up north and let's go spring bear hunting or whatever. And so it was kind of embedded a little bit more into the culture, like all around. I mean, whether you were like, there was a lot of guys up there that were just meat hunters because there wasn't the grocery store. So hunting, you know, when hunting season started, typical Canada, you're driving down the gravel roads and you're waving to everybody because you know everyone. Everyone's kind of your neighbor. It's not a ton of people up there. So you're like, oh, hey, yeah, oh yeah, you filled your tag. Oh, that's a good one, you know. So a little bit different environment up there for sure. In fact, like when I first moved down here on a baseball scholarship, I went down to St. George. I mean, I didn't even switch over to start hunting Utah for I think like 6 years or 7 years probably, because I was still able to go up to Canada and hunt fairly often while I was in school. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. So then you kind of get into Utah and you kind of start figuring out you're pretty good at this. And because, I mean, you were saying you were helping other people find deer and kill deer, and then you kind of took the plunge like, I got to start flying myself and hunting these deer.
Yeah, it really came to like, man, like I feel like I've had tons of run-ins. I mean, I've had my fair share of whitetail and mule deer experiences, you know, elk, you know, a lot of different species up in Canada, but I really hadn't done that like high country out west. You know, everything was more, you know, like those deep canyon river hunts or you know, just those big rolling plains where, you know, frigid temperatures and snow are just like pushing you around. And, you know, you drive around a lot up there just because they're moving around so much in the rut. So it kind of started with first meeting a few people, you know, outside of baseball, that were into that scene. And then going out with them. And then it was just like, you know, going up with them and I'm like, man, I've got to do this. And so I just, yeah, I dived full fledged into the Utah hunting and man, it's been amazing. It's been a lot of fun. I've learned a ton.
Yeah, and then so that, I mean, I guess fast forward to 2024, this past hunting season, and you're on an absolute giant. But like, kind of go through, like, had you seen this buck previous years? Like, were you, I mean, I remember you told me you saw him for a second on the archery too. Like I just want to hear the full story of this deer.
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking at, and so I'm a big game guide for Lazy Bar Tee Outfitters. It's just me and a couple older dudes, like, you know, just a couple good old boys that take out a couple hunters every year. Like nothing fancy. I do it because it's a little bit extra money in the pocket to get me out doing what I love, you know, whether it's hunting elk or hunting mule deer or, you know, every once in a while we'll take a goat hunter or something like that. But yeah, I was looking back and I always have so many photos. So I'm trying to look back and I'm like, man, like talking to my buddy Jared, I was like, hey, like, you remember 2 years ago, that big wide 3x4? Like, I wonder, maybe that was him. It's like, I have to look back and see if I, you know, see if I can find those videos or those photos. And like, a lot of times I end up deleting that stuff because my phone just gets crazy. But it's just so hard to say. I mean, I look over so many deer every year. And I don't know, you'd think that you would see him. I mean, his age results just came back,
Oh, they did.
from the lab. Yeah. They just came back. The wildlife biologist hit me up the other day and sent me the stuff, and he was 7.5 years old,
No
which is pretty
way.
impressive for a general season unit. And so I
That's
don't know. I
crazy.
mean, it's hard to say. I don't have any like rich history with him,
Yeah.
for sure. It was more of like a this year, like, holy crap, look at that stud. Like, what the heck is that?
And sometimes, I mean, I guess that age class, I mean, he probably, you'd think he threw a couple good years before that, but like I've seen bucks at like are 140 to 160 bucks, and then they put on 30, 40, some, like I've even seen a deer put on 50 inches in 1 year. So
yeah, you just never know. I mean, if the start, yeah, he could have just blown up. I mean, mm-hmm. It could have been a buck that I'd looked at before and I was just like, oh, you know, like he's pretty wide, but you know, he's a little bit, you know, spindly, and, or maybe it was just so far away that I'm like, ah, he doesn't look like that caliber of deer that I want to go after. But you just never know. I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm usually looking over tons of bucks. And so I tried to look back and kind of like what I was telling you, the crazy thing is I haven't had a single person come forward, and like usually a buck of this caliber, especially on a general unit, you know, come forward and be like, oh yeah, like I've got footage or I've got video of that buck, or like, oh yeah, I was chasing that buck. Congrats. Like, I think there was maybe like one guy and I asked him about it and I didn't get a response back. So like, who knows? But as far as I know, this buck got to 7.5 because he was a phantom. I mean,
yeah, I think the pocket right, I found like, him in was like those general season bucks. I mean, even if it's a mediocre buck with like certain characteristics, like that back G2 on your buck, like people would kind of recognize that and be like, oh, I have pictures of that buck. And even if they had one run in with it, like they'd be like, oh yeah, I was hunting that buck hard, just because it's such a big deer. They want like kind of be, I don't know, like be associated with it in some way. So that is super interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast and you end up seeing a picture of this buck and you have any history with it, please send it my way. I'd love to see any footage or video, because I only saw him once. And I mean, we can kind of get into like the whole story, but I mean, I only saw him once, and it was like the second last day of archery. And it was just like one of those moments of like, what the heck is that thing? Because I mean, you saw how heavy he was.
Yeah,
hardcore. I mean, you add that velvet on and it's just like, that thing doesn't even look real. So
I can't even imagine.
But yeah, I mean, so it kind of all, I mean, all kind of started, it was turning out to be pretty busy year as far as guiding. And, my buddy Jared drew out, a sweet, or I guess he didn't draw it out. He ended up somehow snagging this tag on the leftovers. And if you hear tag, that's my Canadian accent. So if that's bugging anyone, sorry about it. So he ended up, getting this, loader tag for Colorado, which is just a stellar unit. So we were kind of planning on doing that. But I had a Manti archery elk hunter that I was going out with a lot. But, so we went up opening weekend, to one of our usual spots. And, I usually just hunt with Jared. My buddy Jared, I keep a pretty like low profile with like who I hunt with. And like, I know some people on the mountain just from like running into them. When you get up into that really burly, like high country stuff, usually that opening weekend, there's a bunch of people. But after that first week, I mean, people usually start dropping off like flies, and then a lot of times you're just up there by yourself. But
yeah.
So we went up there opening weekend. We had done some pre-scouting, not a ton, but we got up there kind of looking over a bunch of bucks, and you know, there are some decent bucks in this area, but there just wasn't after last year. It had just got blown up by all the hunters. I mean, the muzzle loader that last year of having that variable optic, it was like a bloodbath. Like I felt like I was World War III up there.
Really?
It was crazy. And I'm just like, holy crap. Like I actually felt bad for the deer. I'm just like, oh man, like these deer can't even get out of their own way. There's like someone on every pinnacle just making it rain 600 yards, hitting them in the foot, hitting them in the hip, like not lethal kills. It was actually pretty sick to see. And that's probably been the biggest culture shock from Canada, is just the density of hunters.
Yeah.
And just kind of the scenarios. I feel like it kind of creates these unethical scenarios where you feel pressured to do something that you probably normally wouldn't do. And they'll be a good example of that when I actually see this buck. And I called this buck Biggie Smalls. So if I refer to him as Biggie Smalls or Biggie, like that's kind of what we ended up calling him. And if you look at the pictures, you know, we kind of came up with that. My buddy Jared came up with that because, I mean, his fronts were just absolutely giant. And then his backs just, they're really not that small, but they deceptively looked really small because of how big his fronts were. I mean, he had a 16-inch G4 on the one side and a 15-inch. I mean, that's the biggest front forks I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, his fours are insane. Like, I could not believe how long his fours were.
Yeah, and just so much mass. It's just like, what is this elk tine doing on here?
For real.
But yeah, we called him Biggie Smalls because he was big up front, he was small in the back, and just so stout with his frame. But yeah, we didn't see like a whole lot of age class. And I think that was due to a lot of just the hunting pressure. So I think I made a play on one buck with my bow, got within like 17 yards. He was with like a 170s class buck, like a good looking typical. And behind him was like a 180s class buck. That was another nice framed typical. And I had that 170s buck at like 17 or 20 yards for probably, I don't know, 25 minutes. I mean, the stock worked out great, but that 180 buck was just probably like five yards behind him. And just his vitals were just tucked behind this tree. And I was stuck in the mud right where I was at. Like that was the spot. Like there was no way I was getting any movement or else I was going to get pinned. And so, yeah, I mean, I really wanted to hold out. He was a really good looking buck, that 180 buck. And I'm like, I'm not going to shoot that 170 buck knowing he's right there. And finally, that front buck, I think the wind started swirling when the thermals changed. And he got up and they busted out. So I stood up and actually drew back. And they both stopped. But that 180 buck actually stayed behind him. And he stopped with his vitals perfectly behind this like cedar tree, and I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. And then it was just like, boom, they went over that ridge, and I was like, well, that was a hell of a long hike. And it was so hot, so I was like, man, this is gonna be brutal, the walk of shame. So yeah, I mean, it was fun though. On my way back, there was a couple other hunters up there, and there's another buck that was pretty good that was bedded, and they were like, hey, on your way back, are you gonna make a play on that buck? And I'm like, you know what, man? Like, it's all you, like a couple of younger kids.
Yeah.
And I'm full of piss and vinegar. So I'm like, dude, I feel like I'm getting old when I'm up here. Like every year I get up there, I'm like, oh man, I don't have that stamina I used to have. It's like, yeah, you go for it. I'll stay up on this ridge and I'll just play spotter. And so he had a good opportunity with that buck. It was good. It was good fun, you know, some good vibes and stuff. And, you know, that didn't work out, but we kind of all got together and, you know, and just chit chat and had fun on the mountain and type thing. And then, I can't remember. I think it seems like, you know, there's a good storm coming in. So I think we ducked out of the rain for a while. And then I think me and Jared headed off the mountain. And then I had to head to Manti to start, scouting for this archery hunt. And so, yeah, just didn't see the age class that I was hoping for. I mean, I did like that 180 class buck, but he drops down into this gnarly little canyon, and you know, with those other guys up there, I was just like, yeah, you know what? Like, so I'm gonna head to the Manti and see if I can't find some good bulls and stuff. So I headed to the Manti. Jared didn't have a tag this year, and we usually always have a tag together. We do the dedicated hunter, and it seems like we're kind of always on that same schedule. But he didn't have a tag this year because he had harvested two bucks those first 2 years, and so he was really just helping me out. And then in exchange, I was going to go help him out in Colorado.
Yeah.
And so I was on the Manti for like 14 days. We were getting into some bulls. They were getting fired up. And this archery hunter who was awesome to hunt with, he was an ex NHL goalie.
Oh, really?
And so, it was fun just being like, oh man, I never thought I was going to be guiding like a hockey player, a fellow hockey player. And I played hockey growing up. So that was yeah, fun. And he didn't have a whole lot of experience. So it was just like all new, like all these new emotions, like elk hunting. I felt like I was experiencing them again for the first time. So I was there for like 14 days. We were just grinding it out. We had one bull come like 10 yards. He was a little bit too small. We had another bull just come in on a string and stopped at like 15 yards, but like right behind a tree. I mean, he had three or four like really good stock opportunities. It didn't end up coming together, but yeah, we had a blast. So that was really fun. And Jared was holding down the fort. He kept popping up to a couple different areas and was seeing if he could just find a giant, which he hadn't really seen anything. And so yeah, once that kind of wrapped up, I had a few days before the early rifle manti. And so I just kind of started talking to Jared. I was like, well, like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. Like, there hasn't really been anything great up there. Like, nothing that really gets me like stoked. And I was like, look, like, there's this area that's like, that I've been looking at a long time. I see it. It's just way the frick in there, but it's an area that I've really wanted to hit. And he was like, let's do it. I'm game. So there was a few days left of the archery or something like that. And this was like a 6 mile hike and pretty like grueling, like really like steep, big canyons, just way out there. And so you had to wake up really early. So Jared was a stud for continuing to just roll with the punches and drag himself out there with me. Cause you know how it is if you're hunting solo. In that high country, I mean, you got to think to yourself, like, I've got to have my satellite phone. And if you are hunting solo, it's like, yeah, something could happen. There's no cell service usually. And like, yeah. Things can go south pretty quick. Right. And so he was a champ for just, you know, anytime I was like, hey, you going out, you want to go out in the morning? He was like, oh yeah, I'm game. Let's do it. So we bonsaied in there like 6 miles and like halfway through this, I'm like, man, what are we doing? Like, maybe we should have went up to one of like, you know, the more familiar spots, but I was like, you know what? Like, got to try out this new area. Like you don't win if you don't play. So we got back in there and like, honestly, it was like crickets the first day. And I was just like, oh dude, this is a total bust. Like we just worked our can off and just not seeing anything. And, yeah, it was either the third to last day or second to last day of the archery hunt. I can't remember, but we were, a couple smaller bucks, stepped out. And so we had the spotters on them and, we were just sitting there and we were watching them and it was getting pretty close to that time. We're like, all right, it's time to like bail out of here. But looking through the spotter and I just saw like a glimpse of like, you know, some mature like velvet just like breathing through the very bottom of my spotting scope, like no head or anything, just like a little bit of rack. Yeah. I'm like, oh Jared, what's that? And got the scope repositioned and there he is, Biggie Smalls, just
no way.
Velvet full fluffed, just like this, it's like this buck came out of Narnia and just like showed up out of nowhere. It's like, what the heck? Like all those miles were worth it at that point. Cause we're just like, what the heck is that thing? And like, we didn't get any picture, we didn't get any video because like he was in from like one little section of like jack pines. And he was just like, hey guys, like I'm moving through into my little hellhole. And, that's all you get. But honestly, like that's all it took. Once we saw him, we were like, that's it. Like that's the one. Like that buck needs to die. But yeah, we went in there those last couple days and didn't see him. And we're just like, holy crap. But it was pretty thick. It was a pretty steep, dark canyon. And yeah, so those last 2 days we're just like, man, like that's honestly gonna be super tough. But we didn't see him, and so that wrapped up the archery and then I was off to the manti. And so manti, early rifle, you know, chase some bugling bulls, which is just, you know, amazing. It's always a fun experience to be in with those bugling bulls. And then it actually was one of those things that I was like, all right, Jared had his Colorado muzzleloader hunt, and I was like, "Hey, all right, I've got this." And I was like, "Come meet me at the bottom of the canyon on the Manti unit, and let's toss your wheeler in and let's roll." So right from the Manti, it was boom. We're off to Colorado, getting our butts kicked. I mean, I know that some toads get pulled off of that. And actually, I think it was like that two, and it is a beautiful buck, but there was like that 260 something muley that was pulled off of there this year. Just an absolute toad. And so there's big bucks, but it was a little bit of a eye-opening experience. We saw tons of deer sign, but holy crap, it was thick. I mean, we put some miles on and hiked some crazy little peaks and stuff to look into these basins. And, yeah, we were just having the hardest time finding, you know, some mature deer. I mean, where we were finding the deer, it was a lot of those like younger bucks that were down in that like lower country, but we'd be hiking through these thick pines and there would be mature buck tracks everywhere. But we would start like following these buck tracks and getting up on these little glassing points where we could get a little bit better vantage. And then it would be like, boom, Mother Nature's coming at you. And we're just getting nuked. And it's just like, oh man, like what could go wrong did go wrong on that hunt. Like it really sucked for Jared. Cause it was, you know, it was a great opportunity. But it rained and then we were in this burn. So then hiking out of that burn, our boots had to have been like 30 pounds. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. And we did that. We did a tug of war with that hunt for, I think he actually, you know, he had went out there beforehand and scouted it out, you know, for a couple of days. And so he had a good idea of where he wanted to be, but man, yeah, Mother Nature really threw a curveball at us and we kind of got our butt kicked. It was a little bit rough.
That unit's so tough though. Like I've even been there on second season and like, if you don't get weather, like it is the hardest hunt in the world. Like I know the genetics and some of the bucks pulled off there, but like if they're in that thick stuff, like they're almost impossible to kill or even find.
Yeah. And I mean, like we got really good, you know, we got really good help. We called the wildlife biologist. We had a couple buddies that used to live in Colorado and they're like, yeah, go check out the red ledges, like hike way the freak out there. So, you know, hiked 12 miles out on the red ledges. And I mean, I'm sure there's some absolute toads that just hide in some of those like basins, but wherever we were at, we just weren't having that luck. I mean, it wasn't for lack of effort. I mean, we were putting in the time and the miles to try and cover as much country as possible. And we saw some bucks, but, you know, there was one that was tempting and it was kind of one of those things of like, Jared, I was like, are you sure? And he's like, yes, I don't know what I'm thinking, man. He's like, this is the only deer I've seen. He's like, and I was like, yeah, you're right. He's like, I probably wouldn't even shoot that on the last day. He's like, man, I was like, it's crazy how not seeing any wildlife for a while just starts making you re-question your thought process. But it was a good sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we left that one just getting our butt kicked. So, it's kind of been a rough year so far at that point. And then we were just, you know, we had high hopes for the muzzleloader. And so boom, we were back. So we got back, got the muzzleloader sighted in with the new, red dot and, made sure that was good. And I mean, like realistically with those red dots, I mean, I've listened to a few podcasts on here and stuff. And, a few of the episodes, you know, some of those guys were saying 350, and I think you can shoot 350 if you feel really comfortable, but man, with those single power red dots, I mean, they look so small at 350. I mean, yeah. I practiced at 350 and like when I was up there, I shot at 350, but I'm like, I don't know if I'd shoot at a deer at 350. But if, you know, if that buck stepped out, I might be tempted to let one fly, but that was the crazy thing is so, muzzleloader, I mean, man, we went in there, we packed up, spent a couple days, camped overnight, went back in there a few more days and nothing. We saw like a couple of smaller bucks, and man, we looked and looked and looked, and dude, Biggie was nowhere to be seen. We were like, what the heck? Like, where's this deer? We're checking every little crevice. I mean, I'm probably like, you know, probably 6 days, 7 days we went back there, and it got a little bit discouraging, but
yeah,
we knew he had to be in there somewhere. I mean, we hadn't seen like really any hunters. There was a couple like horse guys that like passed on by and just like kept going. But like that was it, like honestly. So we didn't think there was anyone else, you know, that was really in there. And the only like thing would be is maybe he shifted canyons. So we checked a couple other canyons, but ultimately at muzzleloader, we were just professional bird watchers, just waiting for this buck to step out somewhere.
Yeah.
We had seen a few other, you know, other smaller bucks, but just, you know, not him for sure. I mean, there's no mistaking that buck when he steps out. So that wrapped up, and it was kind of a moment of like back to the drawing board, like, well, what do you think? And so we were waiting for the rifle. I think I had a couple other hunts. I don't know. There was a Manti muzzleloader, or maybe it was the Wasatch for elk. And then there was the late rifle Wasatch, I think. And so, like, there's a lot of elk hunting sprinkled in here. So it was a lot of, like, trying to balance the schedule to, like, hunt for myself, which is probably the biggest drawback from guiding is, you know, if you have that full schedule, like it's good, you're still out there, you're still hunting, but you get a wide array of clients and sometimes they're not on that same like wavelength. So it can be tough that way, but sometimes it's tough to like juggle your own hunt. And like, all you want to do is go hunt this giant deer that you've seen, but right. You know, you have your obligations, which I mean, there could be worse things than being out there, you know, hunting elk, but so yeah. There's a couple of those, the seasons get so crazy. I, you know, I couldn't remember what was what, but yeah, then it was just kind of a waiting game until the rifle hunt. And, yeah, it was, luckily in perfect Utah fashion, we got some weather, and I would say that weather was the biggest game changer. When that weather hits, and if there's anything I've learned from Canada hunting, is the weather makes the big bucks come out a lot of times. In my experience, like if I'm up in Canada, a big storm, that's like I push everything aside. I'm like, all right, we're going tomorrow because that big storm is going to push stuff around. And so, and this is funny. So Jared's wife is like, I don't even know what she was. She's probably like 6 months pregnant.
Oh,
six
really?
And a half months pregnant. She had dedicated hunter, and she's like, I'm coming with you guys.
Oh man.
And I'm like, I was like, Jared? He's like, dude, she's coming with. Like, we got this. And I'm like, all right, she's coming with. So I'm talking like a foot of snow and a lot of miles. And we are just, and she's a trooper. I mean, she won't complain. So, you know, she's just, we're blazing in here, and hip flexors are on fire. Just trying to get through the snow. Wouldn't be the first time trying to like do a rodeo through all that snow, but you know, we're determined. And so I go up to this far high ridge. He stays back with Storia's wife, and I'm just dying. I'm like, holy crap. I was like, that was brutal. And I was like, you know, so brutal that I'm like, dude, we see this buck and we shoot this thing. Like, the three of us look like crap. Like, I don't think, like, I know that she's not carrying anything because she's pregnant. And like, between the two of us, like, I don't know if we'd even make it out of here. But I'm up on this high ridge, and like, I start glassing, and just a nice, nice blanket of snow, like, everywhere. And honestly, like deer were starting to come out of the woodworks everywhere. And I'm just like, I didn't even know this canyon had that many deer. Like, this is crazy. And, but still no biggie. And, so I radioed down to them, and there was actually a really nice 4x4, probably like a 180s class, typical.
Yeah.
That was bedded down. And this is after Jared had come up. I said, hey, there's lots of stuff moving around there. Jared comes up. Jared spotted this buck bedded. And we're like, well, sweet. I was like, well, now it was like decision time. I was like, man, like, I don't know. I was like, we haven't seen Biggie in like 9 or 10 days. Like, we don't even know if he's in the area. Like, it's kind of like one of those things. It's like, all right, like, story, like, what do you want to do? And Jared didn't have a bipod on his rifle. And the way that it was kind of set up, if the closest you could get was like 650 to like maybe like 750 like yards.
Yeah.
Because it was just an absolute death canyon in between where this buck was bedded and where we were at.
Okay.
But we closed the distance and we get down there and I'm like, man, I think I might regret it if I don't take that buck. Like, I don't know if Biggie is still around. Like, you know, there's a couple days on the muzzleloader I didn't get in there.
Did you see him at all since that one time?
Nope. That one time for 20 seconds is the only time I had seen him.
Okay, so.
And,
like, you don't even know. Yeah, okay.
It had been a hot minute. And so the thought process was getting blurred. It was getting kind of like, I don't even know if he's in here. I was like, right. I feel like we would have seen him. And so, like, Jared's kind of giving me this look, and I'm like, man, yeah, I'm going to regret it. And this is kind of where it got crazy. And this is probably where, like, the luck came in. And, like, I asked, you know, I always say, like, putting your time in the field, getting your, like, just time in the field is going to be your number one friend, you know, like, ally. It's just putting yourself out there. Like, that's the biggest thing. Time in the field trumps all. First off, you're going to learn the most experience, but second of all, you're just going to see stuff because, like this buck, I mean, he just, heck, I mean, he eventually was in that canyon, but it took 11 days for him to step out of wherever the freak he was. Yeah. But I make this decision. I'm like, Jared, I got to take this buck. That guy is a nice 4x4, especially for general. I mean, he's like a good, solid, like 180 frame deer. Just beautiful, symmetrical front forks and back forks. I'm like, I'm going to kick myself if I don't.
Right.
So I start getting my setup. We're like 650, 700. I've got a bipod on and I do a lot of like, you know, I do all my own reloading. I do a lot of like long range shooting. So I feel really comfortable at that distance. I haven't done like any of like the big PRS stuff, but I'll go out to like Ely, Nevada and do some of those good old boy, like critter shoots and stuff.
Okay.
And so like, I feel pretty comfortable behind a gun.
Yeah.
Like 650 doesn't seem like it doesn't make me nervous.
Yeah. Like, that's
but I get set
enough.
Up. Yeah. Like I get set up and, I go to look through my scope and I don't know when or how this happened. I had just shot my rifle before the hunt. Everything was good. I couldn't get my scope to focus. And I was just like, what the heck? So I'm adjusting the parallax. I'm adjusting the diopter. I'm zooming in. I'm zooming out, adjusting them both. Like, I'm doing everything in my power without getting a wrench and dissecting this scope, trying to figure out what the frick is going on with this scope.
Right.
But like I could be all the way zoomed out and I could have a clear picture, but I couldn't even see a reticle. It was just non-existent. But I would zoom in to like 20 power and the reticle would be clear, but the whole image would be just like a blur. Like you couldn't even tell what you're looking at.
What?
And so no matter where I was on that power spectrum of my scope, like, it just wasn't happening. And so, you know, Jared's like, do you want to use this gun? And I'm just like, I feel confident, but, like, I don't know if I want to make that shot without a bipod,
Yeah.
being like a dead rest. Like it's far enough to where I'm like, last thing I want to do is go trudge around in the snow and like be tracking some deer in a foot of snow all over this hellhole.
Right,
And
right.
so right then and there, I'm like, well, this sucks. Like I'm heading off the mountain. Like I've got to go get this figured out. Or go get my other rifle and come back. And so I gave my sleeping bag to Story. I've got like a nice like down sleeping bag and she loves to sleep in that thing. So I was like, here, well, I'll take your sleeping bag or whatever. Here's my sleeping bag. Like they were gonna stay on the mountain and see if something else would happen that would give them a better opportunity. So I peaced out and they stayed up there. And I think it was like middle of the next day, Jared called me and he's like, yeah, we came up the mountain. Like I had to get some work done and, Story was just exhausted, which I can't blame her. Like 6 months, 7 months, like there's not many women that are willing to do that. Like I can't get
Yeah.
my wife to go hike. My wife grew up in St. George. Like she ain't hiking through snow. Hell no. So
Yeah.
that's impressive. Like I'm always impressed with where he pulls that woman around. So props to them for just like going in there. But
Right.
they head off, he's getting some work done. And I'm kind of just like a little bit mentally depleted at that point. I'll be honest. Like
Yeah.
what could go wrong did go wrong. I'm a little bit frustrated that we haven't found this buck again. Super frustrated that I did find a buck that I was probably, I was willing to take him. He was a really nice looking buck and just that scope thing happened, so I'm pissed. So,
Did you ever find
but
out like what went wrong with your scope? Like why did it do that? That makes me
no,
kind of
I
nervous, like 'cause I mean I that's a hard situation. You make everything happen, all that work, and then it like comes down to your equipment failure. Like that's rough.
I'm not gonna say the brand, but like it's a really reputable brand and it's a pretty expensive scope. They make a lot of applications for the military. So I have three of this scope. I love this scope.
Yeah.
So I don't know what went wrong. I'm assuming like a micro adjust screw in the parallax probably worked itself loose internally. And so like dialing just wasn't moving it and it just wasn't in a focal point.
Okay.
That could be my only guess. Now I talked to the company, yeah, their lifetime warranty, they stand behind their product. But I'll be honest, this buck wasn't going to happen if that didn't happen. That buck probably would be dead
Yeah,
and
and you wouldn't
I
have
wouldn't be
your
holding the
200 and
200 and
change.
yeah, I would, seriously. So, I mean, that's where luck is sprinkled in because I mean that is just the weirdest, luckiest little mishap I think I've ever had in hunting.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird like blessings in disguise. You're like, oh man, thank goodness this scope took a dump right during my hunt and I had to head off.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's just crazy how those things work sometimes. But I
It
headed off and I
is.
got my other rifle. I got my other rifle. I checked it. I made sure it was dialed in. Got everything put into my binoculars, as far as like my dope and stuff. And like I said, I was kind of a little bit depleted. And Jared was pretty busy with work, and he was like, "Dude, I think you just need to go. I think you just need to go up." And I'm like, "Man, I don't know. Like, I have a long hike." And I was like, so I was kind of honestly being like reluctant. It was like one of those moments where you needed a friend to just be like, hey, quit being a pansy and just get in there.
Yeah,
And so like
for
he kind of had
sure.
to like talk me into it, like, come on, man, like, dude, you got this. Like, you gotta go find that buck. Like either one of them at this point. And so I'm like, all right, well, it's like I don't love being way back there by myself. I was like, dude, is there a morning? Like, can you spare a morning? He's like, look, Wednesday morning. So this had been, I don't know, 3 days had transpired between then and that, but it'd been really cold. There was still lots of snow on the ground. But he's like, dude, Wednesday morning, He's like, but I've only got the morning, so I can come help you like glass, and then I've got to bounce. And so I'm like, dude, I'll take it.
Yeah.
So I've got my rifle, and I'm like, okay, this thing better not get all shaky on me, and I'm going to be so pissed. So we trudge in there. We wake up at the ass crack of dawn, and we head in there, and he stays down on that lower ridge, and I head up to that higher ridge just because it was quite a little bit further and quite a bit steeper to get to this higher ridge, and I knew that he had to bounce. So I was like, hey, stay down on this lower ridge, glass it, let's stay on the radio, let me know what you see. I'm up on this higher ridge, and naturally, and I don't think I mentioned this, but where that buck was bedded before that nice 4x4 was in like this little group of jack pines that was kind of like all by itself. There wasn't anything really around it. Just this little, you know, it was just kind of, you know, snow. And so it was a little bit more exposed, but this buck was in a spot like I had never seen does. I had never seen bucks. Like around that area, it was just like off the beaten path. And so if I hadn't seen that buck, I don't know if I would have seen Biggie.
Yeah. Like you wouldn't have even,
because you know, So I got up there. I knew Jared was going to have to take off after like the first hour because his biggest dumpster client, he just started a new dumpster business, Utah Valley Dumpsters. And it's been going awesome. And so like his biggest client, he wanted to keep this guy happy.
Right. Of course.
And so we're there. Yeah. So I totally understand, but I'm like, I'm just stoked that he came to like help me spot.
Yeah.
And I get up there, and naturally the first place I'm going to like gravitate to like glass is going to be this little patch of jack pines. And like first light, which was like, oh, I don't know what it would have been, like 720, 730, probably. Maybe 740, like something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking through my binos. I've got those like SIG stabilized binos. And so like, I don't even have the spotter out.
Yeah.
And I just see, boom, mature rack, like 10 feet from where this other buck was bedded. And like, I didn't even know it was Biggie at that point. I just saw mature rack, and I didn't even like think that there's a chance that it was Biggie. I just thought, so I radioed Jared, and I'm like, dude, that buck is back bedded in that same spot, like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
And we just start, and I'm just like, dude, what are the chances? And I was like, look, he's way over there in that hell hole. I was like, there's no way that you're going to make it to like get this guy taken care of. And so like we make this game plan, and I'm like, okay, look, I'm going to go plow this buck, Jared. You go take care of your guy. I'll get this thing plowed, and I'll get it quartered out. And then you can come back when you're done with your dumpsters and stuff, and we'll get this thing hauled off the mountain.
Uh-huh.
So, like, we had a good game plan. And I'm like, all right, I'm going for it. And where I was dropping off was, you know, it was going into this hellhole. So we were radios off at that point. So I barrel down super steep through all the snow, and I get down there. I was probably like 1,700, 1,800 yards from when I first saw him.
Yeah.
And so even with those 16 power stabilized binos, like I just saw stout mature rack, and I was like, I just thought it was that other 4x4. I was like, dude, yeah, he's back. But I barreled down to like, I think it was like 950 yards. And I pull out my little spotter. I've got like one of those little Vortex 13x39 spotters, which are freaking amazing, by the way. I love those for the price point. That little
really?
Spotter is tiny. It's like a little Nalgene bottle, but man, it is a pretty crisp image. I mean, it's not Swaro, but it's also like a fourth of the price, and like I think it's great.
Yeah.
I love that little spotter. That is a backpacking dream. Like, you don't realize how much that extra 2 pounds you're saving off of a bigger spotter, like you feel it. So yeah, anyone looking for a good spotter, that spotter has been awesome. But I threw up that spotter just to like double check to make sure he was still bedded.
Yeah.
And then I just about crapped myself. I was like, holy crap, that ain't that buck. Those fronts are ginormous. That is Biggie.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I didn't even know what to do. I just like froze. I was like, holy crap. I was like, I need like, where's Jared? Like, I'm like trying to get him on the radio. Cause like, dude, I knew I knew, like, if I told Jared, like, dude, it's Biggie, he'd been like, screw dumpsters. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Guaranteed he would have been like, screw dumpsters, like, I'm coming, like, whatever, like, I don't even care, like, we'll make amends, like, we'll figure it out. But, like, I didn't know it was him because, like, I just had my binos up there. And, like, when I cut the distance and I threw that spotter on there, I was just like, holy crap. Heart started racing, like, 1,000 beats per minute. And I'm just like, right away, I'm just like, I have no time to spare. So he was bedded. So, like, 7:30 or whatever it was, 7:30, 7:40. This buck was bedded when I first saw him, which I thought was like, man, bedded before first light. I'm like, crazy. Okay. So, like, I checked. He was still bedded, but it was Biggie. So I'm like, okay, this puts a little bit more pressure on me. Like, I'm, yeah. I'm starting to feel the pressure being in there by myself. And so I'm just like, holy crap. Like, I start dumping gear. Like, everything that I can get out of my pack, I'm starting to dump because I know that it's just going to be a grueling, painful hike out if this is successful. And so then I get all that out and I just start dropping elevation to get to the closest possible spot, which isn't super close, but there was zero other shooting lanes or just there was nowhere else. Like, you had one option.
Yeah.
And so I barreled to this little spot, got my rifle set up, ranged it. He's bedded. I'm sweating bullets because, you know, I get him in the scope at 650 and I zoom into like 20, 25 power and I'm like drooling. I'm like, what the heck? This buck is amazing.
Yeah.
Like he's not in the sun yet, but he's like, he's bedded down. There's not like a great shot, but he's like looking, like he's kind of looking, quartering away from me to the right. And he's kind of looking off, like, down this canyon. And he just serene. Like, you know, like, when you see a buck in, like, that environment, you're just like, wow, that thing is amazing.
Yeah.
And so I'm prone position. I'm going through all, like, my mental checklist of, like, all right, dope, range, you know, like, wind, whatever, which it was a beautiful day. So, like, really not a whole lot of stuff came into play, you know. Just elevation and temperature were like really like the big things. And so I got all my dope dialed in and like things were ready to go. This was at like, probably like 8:10. I was down there set up and, he stayed bedded and I sat in the prone position for 2.5 hours before he stood up.
Jeez.
It was, was the longest. And this kind of comes back to the Utah, just the Utah hunting, kind of the culture, which I love Utah hunting. Like, it has been amazing. I've taken a couple, you know, mule deer with my bow, which is, you know, just a whole new adrenaline rush, shooting something with a bow up in the high country. Just, I mean, anyone who's hunted bow in the high country knows how hard that can be. So like, that is just like a whole nother addiction. But I had taken lots of stuff with a rifle growing up. It was never in that kind of situation because in Utah, like I got to admit, like I was laying there and for whatever reason, like I got down to this weird little pocket on the film knob and I had like one bar of service. And so I called Jared.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude. And he's like, what? And I'm like, it's Biggie. And he just freaks out. He's like, dude, I'm coming back. And I was like, dude, you're already driving. You already got the dumpsters. Like, by the time you get here, like, something's going to happen. Like, I'm either plowing this thing or I'm going to roll down the mountain and you're going to have to come find me next year when the snow melts. Like, one of those two scenarios is happening.
Right.
But I'm like, what do I do? I'm like, this is Utah hunting. Like, I don't know who else is looking at this thing. Like, I haven't seen anyone like really up there. But it's Utah, so like you just never know. And so I'm like, Jared, do I like? I'll be honest. Like, I know good, solid, ethical shots, and like, It's a pretty thin needle. Like, I have to thread the needle. I
Yeah.
think I can do it, but if it doesn't go right, this buck takes like 10 steps and he's down on that little, like, off that little edge, and he's gone.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, I'm debating. Like,
Yeah, because
is
you
someone
don't
going to
know if
shoot 1200?
someone's. Yeah, exactly. Like,
I'm.
people will do that, especially for a buck of that caliber. Like, they'll try to shoot
For
1300
two,
yards and.
yeah, for 2.5 hours straight, I'm waiting for a boom and like some guy just making it rain from some godforsaken plateau at this freaking deer because like I've been there before, like Utah hunting. I mean, like, dude, I was looking at another buck and we're like waiting for him, and all of a sudden, boom, muzzle loader from 650 yards. And we're just like, you get deflated because you're just like, holy crap, like we thought we were the ones looking at this. And so like I'm sitting here and I'm like, Jared, what do I do? And he's like, I was like, I feel like I need to wait. And he's like, man, I don't know. And he's like, I don't know. I was like, I feel like you need to wait too. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna wait. But like a couple times during that 2.5 hours, I'll be honest. Like I was like, oh, like the finger was starting to like inch towards the trigger. Like, I don't know if I can wait any longer. Like, someone might be in here now. Like an hour and a half has gone by. Someone
Yeah.
easily could have just like hiked in here and been like, oh, look at that giant. Because he wasn't in like that usual death canyon. I mean, it was still a hellhole, but he was in the most viable place that he probably could have been in. So, and he was 10 feet from where that freaking other buck was. And so like there was a lot of luck there. Like, there's definitely a little bit of luck sprinkled in. Like I gravitated right to that spot glassing. I was just like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
But man, I was sitting there and I don't know. I mean, I hadn't had this experience before. Like I had been in the prone position a lot, but there's always breaks. So my neck is cramping so bad. Like about an hour in of sitting in the prone position, like I feel like
Yeah.
I've got Parkinson's. Like my neck is like shaking and like I'm like, holy crap. I'm like, dude, this thing needs to get up. And I'm like, I'm dying. So like I'm like stretching my neck, but then like keeping an eye on the scope. 'Cause like I feel like he's gonna get up any second. Well, like that went on for 2 hours, and finally, like this little area was in. Finally, I'm like, all right, and like I'm off and on with Jared. I call my dad, and I'm like, hey, I'm looking at a pretty good buck. And he's like, oh, sweet. He's like, oh yeah, you can outdo the old man. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I guess we'll see. He's pretty nice. He's got pretty big fronts, but like I was like, he's pretty weak on his back because until you see the buck, you can't really understand this, but his G2 does like a hard net 90 bend. Like you
Yeah.
remember seeing him. He goes up about
Yeah.
like 2 inches and then boom, 90, and then like straight out. And so I couldn't see any of that length that was straight out because it was directly away from me every time. So I thought that back point was like 2.5 inches. Like, so in my
I see.
mind, and with how massy it was, it made the I mean, he looked super impressive, but like, I didn't think he was a 200-inch caliber deer
Yeah.
because he was 7.5. His ears were huge, and he had so much mass. He had so much mass in the front in his front forks and stuff that it kind of made it seem a little bit like if he was a more spindly deer, he probably would have looked freakish.
Right,
With
yeah, like
with
his
how
mass
long
hides
his
his
points are.
length. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, his mass was really kind of masking what he truly was. So I got a couple glances where I got his spread and I was like, man, he's got a good spread. And like a couple of those times, like I couldn't quite tell. I was like, something seems like it's kind of weird with that back point, but I could never really pinpoint it. So in my mind, like I always thought it was like a 2.5 inch point. But my cousin from like I'm just trying to kill time. I'm like my ADD's kicking in. Like I'm doing the army crawl back to like take a pee, and every time I take a pee, like I think this buck or like I'm gonna go back and this buck's gonna be like 400 yards down the canyon just happened to be, and so like. It was a very long, interesting sit, but like I'm on the phone with Jared. I'm on the phone with my dad. my cousin calls me from like Hawaii, and I'm just like, oh yeah, sweet. Like, he's like, yeah. He's like, I'm in the San Juan in the Elk Ridge unit, and I just, my buddy just killed a sweet buck. He's like, you do replicas, don't you? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, sweet, dude, we want 7 sets. I'm like, okay. And I was like, well, yeah, like, I'll send you my pricing. Like, let's do it. And he's like, yeah, that's funny that you're calling me. Like, I'm looking at a pretty good buck right now. I'm just sitting in the prone position waiting for him to stand up. So I take a little video through my scope of him, like, looking towards me. And, like, I send it to, like, Jared, and I send it to my cousin. And you know, same thing. Like, they look at it, and it looks really impressive. But until you put hands on it, you're like, I had no clue.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck? And so, finally, the sun is getting to the point where it's going to hit this buck. And I'm like, all right. He hasn't stood up by now. He's definitely going to stand up once that sun gets him. He's not going to want to land that sun. And so I'm really starting to get like honed in, like make sure all my P's and Q's are, you know, Jared's in and out of service, and I'm kind of in and out of service. Well, Jared calls me, the sun has hit him for like 15, 20 minutes. I think the sun hit him at like 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
10:30 hits. And, I don't know. Me and Jared were probably talking about some random BS, just like making jokes. And all of a sudden I see him start to do like the little shimmy, and uh-huh. I'm like, oh, this is it. And I like the phone is propped up against the cheek piece because like I'm doing everything I can to just get like a comfy resting position because my body is just depleted from being in the prone position for that long. And so I go to brush the phone away and I accidentally hang up on him. and I didn't know this at the time. I didn't know I hung up. Uh-huh. But like I'm just like boom, and I get right to the thing. He's doing the shimmy, but like I hang up on Jared, and then from his end, he's like, dude, I didn't know what happened. I just heard, and he was just like, dude, I was in the truck, and I was like, oh crap. And so he stands up and he takes like 2 steps, about to like crest down off this ridge, and yeah. I'm sweating bullets at that point. But like after 2.5 hours, like I'm very calm and collected. Like uh-huh. The adrenaline had really like every scenario that could possibly go on has gone through my mind in 2.5 hours. Like I was pretty well prepared for the moment.
Yeah.
And he took two steps and was kind of like angling down a little bit, but had a, you know, a kind of a quartering away shot to the right as well.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if he, you know, I don't know if he smelt me or was just giving me like the little wink, but he just gave me like, he just looked right back at me. And I just slowly pulled off that trigger, and it was, oh man, it was like the most beautiful thing, like everything that you hope for in a shot. It hit him, perfect shot. And this was with a 6.5 Creedmoor, which I'm super confident with 6.5 Creedmoor, but sometimes, you know, like I like to have a little bit bigger caliber.
Yeah, of course.
Just to make sure I don't have to track anything, but like I'm super confident with this gun. So it hits him and boom, it was a rug pull. He just collapsed. Legs became jello. He drops and just like a little bit of neck movement. And so I'm like, I'm ecstatic. I'm like, no way. I was like, wow. I was like, I cannot believe that. So I called Jared and I'm like, dude, BBD, like big buck down. And we're just having like that celebratory moment. I'm still in the prone position because I'm like, I'm not taking any chances. Like I'm giving this a solid 2 or 3 minutes because I've seen some weird crap, you know, like you hit a buck and like, you know, the nice thing about the 6.5 Creedmoor is like you can see your bullet path and like your impact points super well. Uh-huh. That's probably the most beautiful thing about that cartridge is, and it worked out really good because I probably wouldn't have wanted my, you know, my 30 cal just because it ticks a little bit more and stuff. Because like when you're solo, you know, when you have a 30 cal, you usually have a spotter. So having my 6.5 and being able to see my shot placement and stuff, like I knew it was good. But like I've had a buck get like hit high back and drop like that. And we're just like, and then like 10 minutes later, that buck will get up and take off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the heck? And so I'm sitting there and I'm talking to Jared and we're just like, we're freaking out. And I'm like watching this thing. Like 100% positive the thing's dead, but like buck of that caliber, I ain't taking any chances. I'm staying in the prone position so I could get solid 3 or 4 minutes. Uh-huh. Well, I see him take his last breath. I see him take his last breath, like his last exhale, probably a minute after the impact. And I'm like, dude, it's done. Like, he just took his last breath. And it was like, oh, man, it was just like such a long season came to a close. But, you know, so celebratory moment, called my wife. And I'm just like, babe, like, thanks for letting me go out. Like, my wife doesn't really, like, she's never, her family's never been into hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably doesn't understand exactly, like, why, you know, so passionate about hunting and stuff, but she's very supportive. And so honestly, there's no way I could have done this without having a supportive wife. Like, I mean, I was out there a lot between guiding and hunting this deer. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it was pretty rough, but she was a champ. She was holding down the fort. We've got like a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old at home. So
yeah,
you know, like there's good days and there's days where I'm on the mountain and like, I'm getting death threats type thing. And like, I know those days, the kids are just an absolute handful. I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, babe, I'll come home. Like, I guess I'll come home.
Yeah. But, dang.
So yeah. So I called my dad. I told him and I was like, man, I plowed this buck and stuff. And then I was just like, okay. I was like, well, Jared, I'm going to go pop over here. I doubt there's going to be service and stuff. And I was like, look, I'm going to go get it quartered out and stuff. And then I'll come back to where I got service and like, let's touch base.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm just like, holy crap. I was like, this is going to be brutal. Like, it's already kind of like, you know, the sun's up and like, you know, those winter suns can be deceiving. Like they pull a lot of energy out of you. So it was like quite a long hike. I mean, it was 650 yards, like eye to eye, but like I had to work like up and around to get around this steep ravine in between us.
Mm-hmm.
And get through all these pines. And man, I got over there. And when I came around that last jack pine,
yeah,
and saw that rack sticking up off the snow, I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, what did you do? I was like, that. I was starting to doubt like my field judging skills at that point. So I'm like, that thing is huge.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, those fronts are massive. Like I could see it. Like I knew they were big fronts, but I'm like, is this, like I know this is the same deer, but like, what the heck? Like this thing is a giant. And so like, I try to call Jared and I don't have service. Like I try to call him. I kind of get right to work. I take a couple, you know, videos, like, you know, self filmed videos. I take a couple pictures, whatever. And I start getting to work and start getting them quartered out. There's a lot of snow. So, I get them taped out. I get the head cut off. I pack out the head, the cape, the back straps and the tenderloins.
Yeah.
I take the quarters, get them in the game bags, cover them in snow to keep them cool after leaving. I let them breathe for a while before doing that. And then I got him on ice and started heading out. And man, that was a brutal hike. Holy crap. It was steep. Like it was puke hill type status, plus add some snow in there. And yeah, the sun was just beating down on that side. And I mean, it was a long hike. And that was a big deer. Like it had some heft to him. I mean, I wouldn't say it was my heaviest pack out. I mean, there's been some elk pack outs that are just like, I don't think my legs are going to support this, but it was pretty painful. But it was one of those ones that was like the best, most painful hike, like knowing that all that effort finally like knocked it down. And yeah. So yeah, I mean, long story short, like I got up there, I got into service, just enough service to like take a picture. It was just a picture of it like on the pack. And then it was like, I think I sent him like the field photo and kind of like what you said, like, dude, the field photo is impressive. And you're like, dude, that is a sweet buck, but you can't really, like, you can see, like, you know how it is. I mean, some people are really good at taking photos. I don't think I'm one of those people. Like, I'm just not one of those people that can make a small buck look giant, or apparently make a giant buck look giant. But so I get, dude, he's like, wow, that thing is a stud. Like, those fronts are awesome. Like, it looks good. But I get this thing off the mountain. We decided that we were just going to come in the next morning. I was like, dude, I'm nuked. Like, by the time I get this back, like, I need to go rest and let's come in tomorrow. So we made that game plan. He's like, all right, well, I'm going to come over tonight. So I get it home, and I'm the only person that, like, seen this deer in person. And he's like, I was like, dude, come check out this buck. And I just remember he walks in, he goes to my backyard, and he's just floored. He looks at this thing. He's like, dude, what the F is that? I was like, dude, that is everything I dreamed that buck would be and more. Like, that thing is impressive. He's like, holy crap. And so he's like, we got to throw tape on this thing. It's like dark. It's late. And like, we're throwing tape on this thing. And like, I throw tape on it. And like, I'm pretty like strict with like my measurements. I mean, I do it a lot. When I'm like, you know, people send me stuff all the time. So like, I throw tape on it and I get like 205 or something. I'm like, that can't be right. And so like, I remeasure and like, you know, that same thing, like, I think at one point I got like 207 and I'm like, all right. I'm like, you know what? Like, go to bed. You're drunk, whatever. But really where it started, we realized, I mean, Jared's just like, dude, you don't realize what you just killed. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm tired, man. Like, I was like, I know, like, that's a stud. But then we started like throwing a couple of like, you know, cause I'm fortunate enough to get some giant deer coming in for like replicas. Well, we start throwing up some of these giant deer, you know, 212, you know, non-typical, like a 195 typical, you know, my like 180, like 182, like Alberta mule deer.
Uh-huh.
And that's this thing is just dwarfing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sent you that picture. This thing is just dwarfing it. Like, they don't even look like they're the same species. It looks like a blacktail next to like a mature mule deer. I'm like, so like, that's really when I realized, like, dude, this thing is a specimen. I'm like, I can't believe this deer flew under the radar on this like super hunted general season unit. Mm-hmm. And like, I had seen some 200, like I've seen some 200 inch deers on that unit. They're always non-typical.
Yeah.
I've very rarely, like up in Alberta, I've seen a couple like 200 inch typicals, you know, there's some big ranches that don't allow hunting. And like, you'll be driving down the highway and you're just like, oh, that buck is massive, you know, like right off the highway, you know, like there's some giants up there, but you know, when you have 60,000 acres and no hunting pressure, I mean, those deer can get that big. It's a little bit different when it's on one of the most hunted general season units in the state.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
You know, that was just the craziest thing. I was just like, I you always dream about it, like finding like those general season absolute giants, but, and like, I've seen a couple, but they're always so hard to hunt. They're so smart. I mean, this buck was obviously, he didn't get to 7.5 by being stupid. I mean, we never saw him like hardly at all. He was a freaking ghost. And there was some luck sprinkled in there to, you know, if my scope hadn't gone wonky or he wasn't bedded 10 feet from where that other buck was bedded, this little patch of jack pines, just like by happenstance, like that was the very first spot I looked, like, who knows, it could have been a different outcome.
Yeah.
That's
so crazy. And like, some of the things I picked up on too is just like with the snow and then not seeing them since like the end of the archery, like that'd be hard to kind of stick in there and not think, oh, maybe he migrated, or maybe that one time I saw him was just like luck and this isn't where he lives. Like, he got bumped from his home range. Like, I'm sure all those things went through your head, but to like stick in there that much without seeing him and then like finally make it happen. Like, that's pretty hard to do.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. I definitely had thoughts like, this deer doesn't exist anymore. Like, that was a figment of my imagination. Like, I don't have any videos or pictures. And I was like, you know, maybe he wasn't as big as like what we thought he was. Maybe we were just stoked to see like a mature deer back there. So like there was all those kinds of things. And, but yeah, I mean, I definitely know that like bad weather brings like gets the big bucks moving usually. I mean, in my experience, like it gets the games moving. I mean, they get kind of hunkered down and they get so comfortable with mild weather, and then like those big storms get hitting and, they just feel like they need to, you know, get up and move a little bit more. So I was so happy when that snow hit before the rifle. I mean, that was like my favorite thing. I wasn't so stoked to like hike through a foot of snow for that long, but you know, the big bucks that I have killed in the high country, whether it be on the rifle and stuff. I mean, archery, I've seen a lot. I've chased some big deer in the archery, but man, that is some tough hunting up in like, you know, up in those ribbon cliffs and that rocky shaley stuff. I mean, it is rough. I mean, the stars have to align on archery. And I mean, I've had more failed attempts for sure. A lot more failed attempts on stocks and stuff in the archery than I have successful ones. So that has taught me a ton. And then, you know, when that weather starts cooling down and stuff, some of those giants that you see that just like seem like they completely disappear at the end of the archery. I mean, you're hoping that weather kind of gets moving, and luckily it got this, you know, got this big one moving. So
that's so cool. So like, what were his official, I mean, like, so he was like 208, 210 ish gross. And then like, what was his outside spread and some of his measurements?
Yeah, so I had scored him, and I had you know, Dan is an official scorer for the Boone and Crockett, and he was just like, that is one of the most impressive deer. He's like, hey, you owe it to that deer to get that thing like put in the book. I mean, like that thing didn't live that long in a general unit for you not to do it. Like, I wasn't going to score him, but he had a pretty compelling argument. So I was like, all right, sweet. So it did the drying period and stuff. And like, I was thinking this thing was going to be like, you know, after like drying for a bit, but he came in, did his official measuring stuff, like getting super official with it. And yeah, he ended up going 209 and 2/8 gross.
No way.
And
that's so crazy. I believe it though.
Which is crazy because like with that little stunted G2, it's like he almost looks more of like a 3x4 mainframe.
Yeah.
Which just brings into perspective how freakish he is. But he ended up netting like 202 and 5/8, which puts him in like the top 25 typical mule deer all time in the state of Utah.
That's so
which is
cool.
Just insane. Like if that G2 wasn't stunted, he would have, you know, probably been more around like 213, 214, but I love that little, I don't really like care too much about the score. I mean, the score is great, but he's just a beautiful deer to look at. And that little like 90 degree, like back G2. I love that. I love that he has that little bit of character to him.
Yeah.
It's sweet, but
it is such a,
but yeah, I was pretty shocked when he measured that thing up and he's like, yeah, 209. I was like, like somehow he grew, but you know, I was stoked on it. I definitely, when I was measuring him, I was like, I don't want to be the guy that like measures him and is like, oh yeah, like I shot a 200 incher. And then like, you know, this guy comes along, like Dan comes along and he's like, yeah, 193. And I'm like, oh, okay.
it was nice to have it go.
Yeah. I'd much rather have it the other way, but yeah, I mean, it's nice. I kept him as a, he's still just in that Euro mount phase, like the same as I showed you. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to do some replicas up of them. And I think I'll be at the expo at the Sportsman's or at the Mule Deer Foundation, I think.
Oh,
I'm not
cool.
too sure.
Cool.
I don't know.
Yeah. If you guys get a chance and he's there, you need to go see this buck in person. Like, It's one thing to see the pictures and he looks good and everything, but once you see him in person, it's just like, wow, okay, now I understand what you're talking about. Like, this is a really big deer.
Yeah, he's a stud. So that was a rodeo of the season, and then my wife had a little bit of a break. She was pretty excited about that, but then I drew that late archery elk hunt, and it was kind of short lived break, and then it was kind of onto that.
I know I've had you on for a minute, but just like a quick recap of that hunt, like, is that just the hardest hunt in the world, that late archery elk hunt?
Oh yeah, I mean, I know we've been on for a while, so I won't dive into it, but you know, 15 days long. I think a lot of it's going to come down to weather. The weather kind of played me dirty on that one, but I mean, I gave that one 110% effort. I chased some big bulls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bunch. There was probably like seven that I had that were 330 to 380. But they were up so high. I did 8 stalks over those 15 days, and I think my average stalk was like 2,200 feet and like 1.3 miles.
Okay.
Brutally steep. I lost 14 pounds during that hunt.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And I got within 120 yards on each one of those stalks, and the stars just didn't align. They didn't want to get up. And they really didn't get up in the evenings until, you know, that sun would go down and then that wind would start to swirl. So I got winded a couple times just that wind doing some funky stuff. And, other times they would just feed the wrong way that I thought they would feed out the other way. And they would just, I don't know. They were playing me like a fiddle. Let's just say that. So for anyone who wants to know and is like curious about that hunt, I mean, I cried at the end of that hunt. It was like that last, I mean, Jared was there helping me the whole time. Uh-huh. That last stalk, I was in like a foot and a half of snow. Like, I don't, like, physically my body, you know, was torched, but I think mentally my mind was like torched even more.
Yeah.
So, like, I got up there and I just dropped my knees, and like, I knew that I gave it 110%, but I was just like, I was like almost happy that it was like over. Like, you know, like I was just like, I left it all on the table, but it's a brutal hunt. I mean, at one point I took a snowmobile across like way up on the top of this trail, and then like had to hike 2 miles down off of this road to get down to these elk that I was chasing.
Yeah.
Like, it was insane. It was super fun. I saw some beautiful elk, but it was a rodeo. I know that for my unit, it's over the last 2 years, it's been a 0% success rate. And really? I think across the state, it's only like a 3% success rate or something like that. Like, it's ridiculously low.
Yeah.
Now I know that one kid, Big Time Crit, I thought that he killed a nice bull on that late archery. I don't know where he was. Looked like he was kind of more down south, but like, I mean, I definitely had my opportunities. I would do it again, but like, it's not for the faint of heart. Like, you've got to be, it was pretty brutal.
Yeah.
It was fun though. It was fun. It's a good option, but just know going into that one, like, yeah, it's going to be a lot of work. Now, sometimes it's not always that way. I mean, I know guys that'll roll out there and they'll, you know, first stalk, the stars align, and they're just like, sweet. That was awesome. Yeah. Boom. I've got a bull down. That just wasn't my experience. My experience was like, really? You guys are going to bed at the top of that freaking mountain. And I'm just like, oh, well, here we go again. You know, like,
yeah,
here comes 2,500 feet of vert. Like, I'm, you know, like, I think my legs can make it, but it was super fun. I had so many close calls. I mean, like, everything that could go wrong did go wrong with that hunt. I mean, I had a coyote way the freak up there at high elevation. Like, this bull was bedded in just like this pinnacle of just this amazing spot. And I was like, dude, this is the one. This freaking coyote comes out of nowhere and blows this bull out.
No way.
I didn't have my bow off my pack. Like, I was getting into like a position, and all of a sudden this bull is going 120 miles per hour directly towards me. I just heard Jared on the radio like, dude, he's up. He's blitzing towards you. Like, he's going to be on you. And I just like, I look over, I go to get my pack off, and he's just like right there, like 80 yards, just eyeballing me, like the one lane that I have. And I'm just like, I'm so screwed. Like, there's no way this is going to work out, but I'm just like, really, you know, it was just situations like that. It was just like, man, it was fun, but those bulls were on such high alert. The wind was really wonky because you had the cold snow, but it was really warm during my hunt. I think it'd be better if there's a lot more snow to kind of like get them into like little pockets. They were just, there was too much roaming and movement at that point. But it was fun. It was fun. You know, it's hard to like eat that many points, but I definitely probably could have had opportunities at smaller bulls, but I held out for one of those. I was trying to hold out for one of those bigger bulls, and ultimately I ate tag soup, but I can hang my hat on that any day of the week.
It's not too hard to do when you kill 210 inch deer that same year.
It wasn't too bad of a year, you know, like I'll take it, you know. I said that to Jared. I was like, man, like my body and my mind, like I'm so exhausted. That was the hardest hunt I've ever done. But I'm just like, you know what? It could have been worse. I mean,
oh yeah,
Biggie Smalls is in the back of the truck, so it'd be pretty tough to top that one. You know, 209 inch typical. I mean, hell, I'm gonna have to put him in his own room. I can't put any of my whitetail and stuff around there.
Yeah,
my whitetail will look like coos deer, and I've got some pretty big whitetail.
That deer will make almost any deer look small with that frame. But that's so cool.
Yeah, he's got a sweet frame.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to get on and tell us that story. That's such a cool story, and I think there's a lot to learn from it about your perseverance and just being in there every chance you can get and making it happen. So I really appreciate it, Tyson. Thanks for getting on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I mean, sometimes I can get a little long-winded, so hopefully I didn't stretch that out, but sometimes my mind just starts racing. I'm just like thinking about all these like little details that a lot of times like you just end up forgetting until you're, you know, really regurgitating that story and about how it all went down.
I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on. I mean, I love listening to the podcast. It's been great to listen to some of the other guys, and I've had a chance to talk with some of those other guys before, just in passing, you know, whether it's at the taxidermist or, you know, like online and stuff. And, but super fun. You know, like Aaron Gull, he killed that sweet buck. He was on the podcast.
Well, yeah.
I did some of those replicas of, you know, I think they called them Titan. I don't know if Aaron rolled with that, but, you know, that buck was a stud.
yeah.
But cool to kind of hear some of those other stories of some of those guys that are chasing giants, you know, but like I said, if anyone has any history with this deer, I mean, I'd love to hear about it. I definitely don't have really any history that I know of, after looking through stuff. So that'd be cool to know if anyone had any history with them.
Yeah,
you'd think that someone would,
sure.
But
I know you would think so on a buck of that caliber and in a general unit.
Hey guys, thanks again for listening to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. I really appreciate your guys' support. It means a whole lot. And before we end, I just want to give a shout out to one of our sponsors, Art of the Hunt. He is going to be at the Hunt Expo this year. They're in Salt Lake coming up just in a week or two, actually. It's coming up quick. But my strip buck will be in his booth, and he's also doing a really cool giveaway. He's giving away a brand new bow. So it should be really cool. I'm excited for what he's doing. And he's got me some really cool things. So I think he's on the right track and doing some awesome stuff. So if you want to check him out, it's Art of the Hunt. And Hunt is spelled H-N-T. So I appreciate that. And then I just want to give another shout out to Rider Industries. I use their bipod this year, all fall, and it's awesome. It's quick to use, light, has lots of cool features. And he's also going to be at the Hunt Expo, so if you see him, stop by. I appreciate you guys supporting our sponsors. It goes a long ways. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon.